Welcome to Pints and Politics. I'm your host, Dan Parsons. Welcome to episode number 30. I have written down 36, but it's actually 37. We've been doing this for a while, gentlemen.
Yeah, awesome.
And so let's get into it. So for our regular listeners and viewers, Pints and Politics is a project that talks about pints and politics, strangely enough. But we have, as our guests, some of the leaders in our community, in our state, and tonight is no exception to that. I'm thrilled that two good, I can call friends and associates here in Lincoln, and we're going to talk about what the Airport Authority, the Lincoln Airport Authority, is up to here in Lincoln. So I'm thrilled to introduce the Executive Director of the Lincoln Airport Authority, Dave Herring. Dave, welcome.
Thank you.
And we have on occasion had the reason to share a craft beer or two.
Every so often, yeah.
And I did not forget that you enjoy a craft beer now and then, and so we'll get into that in a moment. But talk a little bit. You've been in Lincoln now for several years. Yeah. You came from Wyoming, and Wyoming wasn't your home.
No.
you claim Pennsylvania as your home, but that's not even your home.
No.
And so give us just the Reader's Digest version. The kids don't know what Reader's Digest is, so give us the Cliff Notes version.
I don't think they know what Cliff Notes
what
is either.
Give us the Google search.
There you go.
If we were to Google Dave Herring, what would we find?
The legal stuff.
That's right.
The stuff
on certain sites.
Yeah. Yes.
No, you're exactly right. I've been here about 7 years now, and it's amazing how time has flown by in that regard. If you've read the bio, I do claim Pennsylvania. I grew up, I actually was born in Ohio, so I was actually born in Columbus. But growing up, I had grandparents that lived in Pennsylvania, and we lived in Ohio until I think I was about 14 or 15, and then moved to Pennsylvania. We moved about every 3 or 4 years, but my parents have now set down roots in Pennsylvania and have been there since 1990, and so that's what I call home. I mean, the fact that they've now been there for, what was that, 30 years or so, that's what I claim home. Both my folks still live there. And so, but we lived in Wyoming for about 13 years prior to here. That was my first job right out of college. And Lincoln has been kind of such a blessing to all of us, is that we never expected to move, quite frankly. We were pretty happy in Wyoming, and then this job opportunity came along, and I have not been able to say enough good things to friends and colleagues about Lincoln, Nebraska. And we're actually excited to host an airport conference here at the end of July, where we get to show off Lincoln to some of our colleagues. So we're ecstatic to be here and look forward to many more years.
Well, you're a leader in your industry, and Lincoln is very, very fortunate to have you. And you've done, in that 7 years, it seems like that's a fairly short amount of time, but you've done some significant things, and we're going to dive into that. So welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. And Nick Kuzik is on the Lincoln Airport Authority. Nick is the president and CEO of Bison, a sports manufacturing company here in Lincoln. And we could spend most of the 30 minutes that we have talking about what Nick does.
But let's not do that.
But
please.
But Nick is a mover. And someone that it has moved this city forward in a number of ways, just a person who cares about this city, who volunteers his time for numerous things, whether it's the zoo or the hospitals or numerous things that Nick Kuzik has done in this city, in addition to serving now on the Lincoln Airport Authority. And you were appointed by Chris Beitler back in 2013.
It was.
And then you had to get honest and actually get elected to the darn thing.
Yeah, and I like to tell people I ran unopposed, which I did. But my son-in-law likes to remind me that when they went on the election commissioner's website, they found there was 400 and some odd people who voted for somebody else. So while I ran unopposed, I was not a unanimous choice.
And you didn't demand a recount?
No.
That's not your nature.
I did not.
Yeah. So Nick and Nick and I have known each other for years, and we could tell some tales politically. Yeah. And we're going to do that after we.
I'll start the story, but then I'm going to make you tell the rest of the story.
But first. as is our tradition, let's pour a pint of really good Nebraska craft beer. So tonight we've chosen a Boiler Brewing Company, which I, again, Dave, I know is one of your favorites.
Yep.
So the beer that you've chosen tonight is called Dean's 100. And so why don't you pop that,
right,
pour yourself one. And so let me talk a little bit about Dean's 100. I love their descriptions. Boy, it ain't funny to tap dank on 420. We'll let the kids figure that out.
Wow.
This year, we're playing along. And Mosaic hops and Mosaic chops in this IPA fit for, oh my goodness. Well, I can't, it's 100 IBUs, and it's what old is new again. It's a heavy hitter, purely piney, boldly bitter, and the leader of the new old school.
That's heavy.
I don't have
that's
any idea
stuff.
What that is
I'm
about.
I'm a wine drinker.
And beers with really long descriptions must be good.
And for Nick and I chose for us, Nick, a Pilsner. It's the Nelson Savan Pilsner. It's a German Pilsner. And again, it's very hoppy. It hails from New Zealand. And they're pulling out all the stops. Hops, it's really hoppy. Well, we'll see what this is like.
Really hoppy. Mike, could make me happy.
It can't hurt. And so I'm going to pour us a couple of
these. I might start drinking more beer if they have like names like that. You know, I'm a wine drinker historically, and they talk about it being oaky and all the fruit and all of this and all of that. But maybe if they got great names for beer, I'll start drinking beer instead.
Dave, do you have any comments as we what attracts you to this beer? What attracts you to, yeah?
Well, I mean, this one in particular, I mean, I'm generally, I mean, we're coming out of, normally during this time of year, I start shifting towards IPAs. So, you know, I'm a big stout fan, love the big, robust stouts, but by the time you start getting to May and June and whatnot, it's getting to be warm weather, and IPAs are just really such a quintessential summer beer. And this one has been one of the ones that Boiler's put out recently. It's one of their newer ones. And, you know, despite the fact that it's 100 IBU, so it's supposed to be in your face, sort of, you know, bitter a little bit. I didn't get that out of it when I first had it. It was just a really great, crisp, refreshing IPA. And so I was excited to have it here tonight.
Cool. Well, cheers, gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Thank
cheers.
Thank you for being here. See, it's very, very light.
So I assume it would be inappropriate to do this and sniff it and say, it's got nice legs.
You know,
it's tasty. That's good.
It's
very tasty.
You did all right.
I like it.
All right,
You did well. That almost pays me back for the bet that we're going to talk about
well,
later.
Well, let's just get that out of the way. And I didn't even remember that, Nick, till you walked in the room a few minutes ago.
Oh, sure.
And
that's because you tried to forget.
I try to forget. So historically, those of you who maybe follow, you have no reason to follow my political career, but I've been involved in politics most of my life here in Nebraska. And Nick and I were at a restaurant years ago, our good friend Kevin Shen at Bread and Cup. And for those of you who follow along, Kevin had an episode a few months ago, and Kevin's going to be back next month.
Yeah, awesome. Kevin's a great guy.
We're going to do a show in his backyard, and it's, I won't give it away, but we're going to have some fun. But so anyway, Nick, I'll just turn the floor over to you for this very short reminiscent of how you shamed me.
Yeah, well, here's how I remember the story, which may be slightly different than the way Dan remembers, but I had not met Dan, but Karen Shen, Kevin's wife, who we knew because we were regulars there, said, why don't you come back? I don't know if you know these people, but why don't you come back and have some wine and we'll talk to these people. And that's when I first met Dan and met a couple other people who worked in, I think, Senator Ben Nelson's office at the time.
Correct.
And we got talking. And at that time, Dan was managing or involved in the campaign for the one of the Republican candidates who were working on being nominated for the Republican nomination for the Senate seat that Deb Fischer now holds. And it was not Deb Fischer, and it was not John Bruning. It was another candidate.
Another
candidate that he was working for. And at that particular time, John Bruning was the clear-cut favorite, as I understand it. All the polls indicated he had a shoe-in to be the Republican nominee for the Senate, and that Stenberg.
Don Stenberg
was who Dan was working for, was maybe kind of running second-ish, and Dan was working hard on his behalf. And then there was this woman, Deb Fisher, who was in the state legislature, and she was an also-ran at that point. Well, we got talking over a couple bottles of wine and, you know, talking, and I had just met Dan.
It was a nice day, as I recall.
And so I like to bet on things, and I'm not sure it's legal to bet on elections, or at least not appropriate to bet on elections, but I threw out the concept of us betting on the election, and Dan said, well, were you betting on Bruning? I said, no, I'll bet on whoever. And he said, I think the bottom line was, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll make it a fair deal for you. I'll bet on Deb Fisher, because she was running at maybe 15% in the polls at the time. Yeah. And Dan said, oh, yeah, okay, well, that's a good bet. How much? And I said, $500. And then I got fairly big. And
here's how I recall it. You said a number, and I said, that's it? That's all you're bringing?
Yeah, okay.
And that's when you said, well, how about 500? I said, deal.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm still paying off that bet.
One beer at a time. I did get a really nice bottle of wine.
And I offered to pay it all in one fell swoop, but we made a deal that you wanted to be able to tell this story for years to come. Yeah, and we're still telling this story.
I did also win a $500 actually, they were in French francs, on when the first Iraqi war would start. So that's the nature of the kind of stuff I bet on.
So the theme is, if your board member wants to bet on something, I would advise against it, Dave. So anyway, it's still
a
fond memory.
Dan is the point. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened with the public relations political consultants. You win some and you lose some. But tonight we're winning because we're talking about the Lincoln Airport Authority, and we're drinking a really fine Nebraska craft beer. So, Dave, there's a lot of things going on with the Lincoln Airport Authority. Dive in and tell us, what's the 101 on what's going on out there?
Well, I think right now, I mean, certainly the big news is what's going on with the terminal, which, is due in no small part to Nick's efforts. This was a project that we started talking about. Well, gosh, the board itself has been talking about it for decades. Going back to even 2011 or 2001, really started talking about it a little bit before that. Certainly that amplified it. I started talking about it shortly after I got here, started talking about the project and showing the need for getting a terminal constructed or a new terminal done. And really the reason behind that is, an airport is a gateway to the city. Very much the same like when you enter off of I-80 or you come into downtown and you see that beautiful skyline. An airport's a gateway to the city, and the terminal is a gateway to the airport. And so it's that last impression or that first impression. And while a terminal isn't going to make or break the ability of an airport to provide service, it is certainly going to resonate with people that use it. And so very quickly we were able to identify some of the things that needed to be addressed. Through the board's efforts, we were able to create a project that was somewhere in between completely ripping down and starting over and being able to go ahead and modernize it. And we're really excited about this. I mean, I think it's really going to put a new face on that facility for years to come.
And your leadership on the board, are you still chair?
I am until tomorrow.
Oh!
until tomorrow at 11:35.
Well, this seems very fitting.
I've been for 3 years.
Yeah.
And, to kind of put a little additional information
please.
On it, the terminal that we have was built in, I think it opened in 1974, if I recall.
Wow.
And
there's some people in our audience that weren't born then.
That weren't born then. I was well before that. But the certainly, all of us who travel on a regular basis pre-COVID recognize that almost every airport is under some level of significant construction at any point in time. It's just the nature of airports. And in the case of Lincoln, we're probably the only airport that hasn't had a major renovation since 9/11. And the advent of the TSA.
Yep.
So, of course, if you travel out of Lincoln, you'd recognize that we have two different TSA lines. Neither one of them are ideal. Until recently, we had no ability to have any version of pre-check that everybody who travels, particularly on business, wants at this point. So our terminal is largely outdated. It's 50-ish years old, and other than a few paint jobs, cosmetic stuff over the years, it really hasn't had much of a much of an uplift. And so, of course, the question is, do you do a little bit of a facelift? Do you tear it down?
Still.
And we looked at the full range of that, and there's five board members, and I believe our five board members have been excellent, and we recognize that we're there for the long haul. It's easy to make decisions for the short term in an elected position, but it's harder to look in entrepreneurial down the road. And
well, those are the hard decisions as a leader in this community that you're used to making.
Yeah.
And so maybe what seems easy for you, other elected officials would shy away from that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't easy for any of us because, there's the nasty word, you can't talk politics without talking property taxes. It's another of the P's you could, so, of course, the reality was we had no revenue source other than property taxes to pay for what is now a $56 million renovation and expansion. It's a combination, renovation and expansion. And we spent a lot of time, all of us on the board, but as Dave indicated, I kind of took the lead on it because I am fairly active in the community and out there. And from the very earliest time, we said we can't do this without property tax. And it turns out that the current terminal was built with property taxes that were first levied, approved by the board in 1972 to build the project that's now out there. That sunsetted in 1986, and we haven't used our property tax authority since then.
I was going to say, that this is historic in that sense, is because you have not used that authority.
Oh, absolutely. You've been,
yeah.
So we should all celebrate that, but the reality of it is the current terminal was built with property taxes that sunsetted.
Yep.
Our current terminal or our project will be funded with property taxes, and I know the difficulty in the community of talking property taxes with all the business organizations, the LEBAs, the chambers, the home builders, the realtors, et cetera. I know the aversion. I don't like paying property tax. I own a fair amount of property. I pay a fair amount of property tax. And so we were very upfront early on and spent a lot of time proactively reaching out to business groups, to individual groups, to anybody who was willing to talk. Met with all the city council people, all the county commissioners, any elected officials, and largely got them on board, despite the fact that it was a property tax thing. And because it's something that needs to be done. It just clearly needs to be done. If we're going to be an up-and-coming community like we think we are, we need a airport terminal and air service, ultimately, to match that.
One of the themes that I've tried to implement here on this podcast is to talk about how this city continues to make historic. I mean, I was talking to somebody just today. Look at, we're in the heart of the Haymarket, the heart of the startup community and Fuse Co-working. I mean, the face of the Haymarket and the face of the city has changed in the past 5 years with the arena and the Haymarket House developed. And if we want to continue to keep young professionals and older professionals and attract new ones and continue to build this city, the airport, as I'm sure your colleagues around the country have watched what you've done, it's the one of, if not the most important things that this city can do, right?
Well, it really is. As a matter of fact, when we first started talking about the project, a lot of people tried to hone it down to the question of, well, we don't need any more space. I said, that's not really the right question that we need to be asking. The question that we need to be asking is, do we want to continue to be, as Nick indicated, a thriving airport, one that is planning for the future, thinking about what that next big step is, or are we happy with where we are right now? I mean, quite frankly, if everybody came forth and said, you know what, we don't Omaha's right up the road, we don't think that having commercial air service in this community is vital when we have, you know, something right up the road like that, well, then the terminal doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And we were very open about that. But I think most people would tell you that most businesses, one of their top five questions is, what kind of connectivity do you have via commercial air service? And so it continues to be vital for us to invest in that.
How do your colleagues, or how does Lincoln's airport compare with similar sized airports around the country? Again, Nick made the point that it's been years and years and years since we've done anything. How do we stack up against other similar sized cities across the country?
I've been actually really surprised since I got here. So one of the things that's great is that an airport our size in the shadow of an airport like Omaha, in many cases, wouldn't warrant the volume of people using it like we have here. The support that this community has for this airport is amazing. And I can't say unheard of because I haven't seen every community like it in the United States, obviously. But one of the things that has pleased me the most since I got here 7 years ago was that, while I will find a lot of people that want to talk about why they do or don't use the airport, or they want to talk about cost or schedules or even GA side when you're talking about Duncan and some of the businesses, I have a hard time finding people that want to speak negatively about the airport. They want to say things that are just blatantly negative. They want to talk about how to make it better. And I think that's what we're doing. And so, you know, certainly when I compare that to other airports in similar situations, you know, state capital, shadow of a hub type airport, we're in good shape. And I think that the other great thing is that, you know, we did a ticket lift study here right after I got here, showed that roughly 75% of our market is going to Omaha. While that sounds like a bad stat, that also means that's another 75% of the people that we can get back.
Even yes.
If you recapture.
You have the market. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, you know, Lincoln, I think, has just sort of touched the tip of the iceberg on where we can go and how we can grow. And we're trying to capture that with a lot of our efforts right now.
What's the status of the project? What's the timeline? Give us an update of where we're at.
Sure. So we have executed a contract. So we are on board with our local construction firm is Samson. Both our architect and construction firm were teams. So a national component that was really specific to terminal development, and then a local component that sort of understood the local environment. And so our architect was Alliance, a firm out of Minneapolis, teamed with Davis here locally, and then Samson, being our local contractor, teamed with Chrisman, which is a you know, sort of a national provider. And so did you want to add into that? Or?
No, only that. So we chose early on to get Samson on board early. We interviewed exclusively Lincoln-based partnerships, if you will, and pick Samson. And so we've signed a guaranteed maximum price sort of a contract. That's our construction delivery method.
Sounds very Nick Cusick to get the best deal and get it local.
Yeah. And we're expecting to start, so we was actually working on this just today. We're expecting to start putting the first, whatever you want to call it, holes in the wall, shovels in the ground, whatever it is, probably around August of this year. Construction time frame is about 2 years-ish, maybe a little shorter than that. We're looking at probably winter of 23, if I remember correctly, is where we're at right now. But we think we'll have passengers in before that. The last part of that construction project is really the reestablishment of the administration offices. So we'll be able to put passengers in and people at the gates and whatnot, probably 6 months even in front of that.
So what does that look like for the average traveler for the next 2 years?
There will definitely be, pardon our mess, signs that are going up in the facility. So largely what people will experience is all of those operational side of things will be consolidated to the south side of the terminal. The north side is where all the big work is going to be taking place, so we'll be doing a significant amount of demo both on the lower floor and the top floor. And so all of your ticketing and whatnot for Delta and United are all going to be on the south side, and all of your gates are going to be on the south side. For anybody that's been in our second floor, the top floor of that, where our admin offices are, that is all going to be removed, and gate hold is going to be put there. So we're working through what we're actually hoping happens is that over the course of the next 2 years, while this is under construction, that some of our efforts to land additional air service is successful. And so while not an ideal time to add air service, you never say no to that. And so we are already putting plans in place on how we can get additional gates and to get additional space to have those operate before the full terminal is done.
Go ahead.
Well, it might be a good time to talk about it, or morph over to talking air service.
Yeah. Please do. Yeah.
But I think Dave can probably give you more information on kind of where we're at on air service right now as it relates to United and Delta. Mm-hmm. It's exciting that Delta's back, and maybe I know there's some reason.
Because they've been back for a month now.
Delta, actually, about 3 hours.
Oh my goodness! Oh.
But they've been selling tickets.
I thought it was May, so that's why I said,
they've
been
selling tickets since May.
But the first plane
was today.
All right.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And it was very exciting. As a matter of fact, one of the things I really love telling people about that, and it's a tribute to the team that we have in place, not only locally, but our service development team. 10 airports in the wake of COVID permanently lost Delta service. Delta was given permission by the DOT as part of that slowdown when COVID hit. And they received money from the federal government as part of a, you know, just sort of keep them afloat sort of package. That was under the anticipation that they would go back into all the communities that they were allowed to stop. However, they were given approval to not go back into 10 communities. Lincoln was one of those communities. Of those 10, only Lincoln has been successful in getting them back.
And wow. So, congratulations. That's a big dang deal. Yeah.
It is, and it's a testament to the effort. So it's great to see that United will almost be back to the capacity they were at pre-COVID by this summer. Delta, of course, is back to the 2 flights a day to Minneapolis. We're working really hard to try to get Atlanta back. Nothing imminent with that right now. But we're starting to progress in the right direction. You know, one of the big challenges we have is that kind of the recovery has happened exactly as we thought it would, is that airports that have that leisure component, where people are wanting to get to the beach or the mountains or things like that because they've been cooped up at home for so long, are really seeing that escalated recovery faster. We don't have that leisure component, so we're more reliant on businesses freeing up travel budgets again. So everybody being willing to travel to conferences or to see clients or whatnot. And we're starting to see that. We do still see a little bit of leisure component and people going through our hubs to get to other places. But we really are starting to see an uptick. And I'm happy to say that the Delta service has been incredibly well received since coming back. We're looking at about an 80% load factor probably for next month, which is better than we even projected. So that, as I've told everybody, the quickest way for us to get additional air service is to use the service that we have. People are doing that, and I think that's going to pay dividends in the future.
I knew we would run out of time, so we could continue this conversation. Maybe we need to have you back once you cut the ribbon and do everything. Nick, talk just briefly about the vision that you have for the Lincoln Airport and Lincoln in general. I mean, you are an important cog of what's going on in this city. What does this mean for the city of Lincoln in this new project?
Well, I've numerous times had the opportunity to speak, of course, about our project, and among the things that I've said is that, number one, I don't think we've mentioned today that a recent study by the state indicated that Lincoln Airport has a $1.2 billion annual impact on the economy of Lincoln. That's a big number.
Say that again.
$1.2 billion
with a B.
Dollars with a B. And even if you don't buy into all the techniques that they use to do economic impact studies and divide it in half, $600 million is a pretty big number too. And even $300 million is a pretty big number. So clearly we have a huge economic impact. I also told people numerous times as an entrepreneur, I think more entrepreneurial, but it's harder when you're an elected official to do that. But I compare projects like the Pinnacle Bank Arena. There was no guarantee that Paul McCartney and Cher and Garth Brooks and you name the list
Pink and,
were going to come to Lincoln, Nebraska when the taxpayers voted to fund the portion of that project.
Yeah.
But they have
built it.
So there's a certain amount of faith. The Innovation Campus is a similar thing. Yep. There was no guarantee that everything that's happening at Innovation Campus was going to happen. So this is a similar project. There's an entrepreneurial aspect of this, and I think it clearly sets us up to, as it relates to air service and being a first-class city, it sets us up to, in reality, enforce and prove ourselves as being worthy of new businesses coming to town, whether it's tech sort of companies, whether it's startups, whether it's manufacturers or whatever. And I had to tell Chris Beitler, I said in his office late one day, this was when we were first starting to talk about the terminal and air service, I said, how would you like it if you woke up and read in the Lincoln Journal Star that United was pulling out of Lincoln after 60 or 70 years or however long they've been there? And he said, well, that can't happen. And they said, well, there's some financial analyst sitting in front of a computer screen in Chicago deciding where they put their planes and their pilots. So yes, it could happen.
Yeah.
So we need to be vigilant. So I think we are.
Yeah, well, you have been, and it's an amazing process to see happen. And so congratulations to what you've done, what you've begun.
That's right.
And we're only starting to see the fruits of that. So,
good.
Well,
we'll keep working on it.
Please do. And come back once we get a little further down the road.
And I guess, and I love the beer.
You do. Well, look, Nick, we can even pour you if there's some left here.
So now you only owe me $499.99.
Well, interest is built on that.
So that was 6 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
That was seven years ago.
Because Deb is running for a second.
Right. Or third. Yeah. She was elected.
She was elected, but she's running second for just term. A second term.
Yeah.
She elected 6 years, yeah.
Right.
So that was the primary, and whatever.
Anyway.
That's another story.
I'm trying to do math after the beer.
Well, listen, as we wrap up, let me just thank our sponsors, the Nebraska Horsemen's Benevolent Protection Association. We're going to have them back on the show here shortly to talk about the wonderful things. Talk about providing business to the Lincoln Airport, a $200 million casino the street.
Yeah, awesome.
So we're thankful for their sponsorship. Pints and Politics producer, Mr. Steve Van Hoosen. Nobody sees, nobody knows what he looks like because he's behind the camera.
Good-looking guy.
He is a good-looking guy. Kim Remington, operations manager at Parsons Public Relations. I want to thank Rachel Barth, director of communications and customer engagement for the Lincoln Airport. Rachel, thanks for helping put this together. The music that you may be hearing right now is by Mr. Jack Rodenberg. Talk about legendary families in this city. Larson Rodenberg family. Jack wrote the music that you're hearing. Thanks to Fuse Co-working, our home, and Parsons Public Relations, and our guests, Mr. Dave Herring, Mr. Nick Kuzik. Gentlemen, thanks. And
appreciate it.
We'll see
appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, we'll see you at the airport.
See you at the airport, absolutely. Fly Lincoln.